of Steel this week, Black Eyes White Movies, directed by Zack Snyder, came out in, I closed my Wikipedia page, 2015,
13.
2013. It is a
Yo.
story of, this is where they messed up with this film right off the bat. It's the wrong title. It is the wrong title. Of course, I'm here with Bernard Harris, my co-host on Black Eyes on White Movies.
Hello.
Talking Man of Steel, like I said, and it's the title just doesn't make sense for an origin story.
I can see that.
It's it only makes sense because we know he's called the Man of Steel.
Right.
But that title doesn't tell me anything about the movie. This is an origin story. It should just be Superman or Superman Origins or the birth of Superman or the man from the sky. If you didn't want to use Superman, you're trying to be clever, but he over-clevered himself. Man of Steel is a sequel title. Because then the steel has to mean something, like more than just the metal steel. It's like he has a steel reserve or steel demeanor in the face of danger that we hadn't seen before. Right now, he's just becoming Superman in this movie.
Well, it's funny you say that because I actually had forgot about this until you started talking about it. But I remember following the story of this movie at the time, right? Like the making of behind the scenes stuff. And it is a sequel title because Man of Steel was originally not going to be a new reboot. It was going to be a sequel to Superman Returns.
What?
Yeah, it was originally Man of Steel. Jude Law was going to play Zod. Brandon Routh returned as Superman, that whole deal. And then that fell apart and they redid a new movie.
They kept, but Snyder kept the title.
But they kept the title. Yeah. And like the
Well,
Zod aspect, you know what I mean? So there's
yeah.
probably some of that script preserved in there, but I've never actually read that script.
Yeah, I wonder if it is online. That's interesting because I can kind of see that happening and being like, man, it's still, yeah, that's, just get down and getting excited about it because there's so much we know about Superman's already an iconic figure. It's not launching a new franchise. But they really just should have scrapped it. Just called it Superman. Also saw a Superman Birthright in the Wikipedia in the development section. That was one of the comics they were looking at. And
it
that would have been
is.
a better title because there was a lot of Birthright type of stuff with the genetic code in this movie. That would have been a better title.
Yeah, this movie, you know, as a okay, so we've had history movies that we've talked about. I'm a nerd on those. We've talked about sci-fi movies. I'm a nerd on those. I think we may have talked about comic book movies. Welcome to another Bernard Harris
Superman specifically, not just comic,
nerddom. But
like Superman
just
specifically, right?
a huge Superman and Batman specifically fan, kind of the DC Trinity, Superman, Batman, Wonder Woman. I'm a huge fan. But yeah, like Superman. Specifically, I think this is like 90%, like this script is like 90% Superman Birthright, that comic. It is, especially the first half of it is very, very close, including
Sure.
the like alien invasion and more sci-fi version of Superman. So definitely good comic to check out if anybody's interested.
So usually, I think in Whiplash, we did a pretty scathing critique on the movie.
For
Usually
sure.
we talk maybe more cultural stuff like Avatar and Old School. It was more like, what does this movie say? This is going to be a scathing critique.
Okay. Well, this is going to be interesting because this is, it's not going to be scathing for me. It's going to be more on the other side. I want to hear it though.
Well, I got a lot of thoughts, and I'm working on a superhero comic of my own. So it really made me question, and I think it's not really, there's a lot of characterization questions. And I feel like this movie asked me to do a lot of work and asked the lore of Superman to do a lot of work instead of it doing the work. It makes me do work in places I shouldn't have to. And it doesn't make me do work in places that I should. It
That is a
kind of gets
perfect
things backwards.
descriptor. That's a perfect descriptor. Definitely we'll talk about that for sure. There are so many things that it over explains that it shouldn't have to, and just breezes right on past the things that it should spend some time with.
Yeah. Okay, so let me think about how to even like get into this. This movie's so long.
So long. Oh my God.
It's so many stories in one movie.
There are so many movies in this movie, dog. Like, and we talked about this before as a problem. I can't remember. I think Gladiator 2 definitely was like a movie where there was like four movies in a movie. I feel is more than four movies in a movie. It's very episodic. It's incredible.
Gladiator
episodic.
Was like changed movies as it went.
Yeah.
It was like every 30 to 40 minutes, it's kind of a new movie. There's something new involved. This one was four or five movies simultaneously, almost.
Very much like simultaneously, kind of ending and coming back in weird ways sometimes.
Especially with like you said, that coming back, the flashbacks. So it starts, I think we just go through like the story, right?
Yeah, let's do that.
And maybe that's the easiest way. So it starts for 25 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't like when movies do this. Don't give me a 20-minute prologue.
Yeah.
Get into the movie. The second Spider-Verse movie did this. It's like with Gwen Stacy for 20 minutes. Can you cut that down? Can you cut that down? I don't need that much. But then they kind of made the movie about her. That's a different critique for a different time. Maybe for a different plot. I don't know. But this one, we're 25 minutes on Krypton. We're on Krypton too long. Explaining all this stuff. The world is dying. He has to make the decision to send his stuff. See, this is stuff. This is work that I've already done. That the audience has already done coming in. So I don't need it like spelled out. I don't need everything explained. I really don't need the scene, to be honest. It would be a better reveal if it were revealed through Superman that all this happened, through Superman and Zod that all this happened, rather than taking us to Krypton. And they did a Krypton series, right, on TV.
Yeah, very much inspired by this take like, on Krypton.
Yeah, this is what that is. Just like, you gave me an episode of TV, half hour of TV, not half hour comedy, but a half hour of a TV show.
Right.
To start a movie that's really not about any of that.
Yeah.
The planet is destroyed. Clark is the only one left. He was sent to Earth. Kind of all I need to know.
Yeah, absolutely.
Then you can tell me later that, especially since his dad is still around, his consciousness and whatever.
Right.
He does. He explains the codex later in the movie anyway.
Yeah.
Like to Lois, and they explain it to Clark. It's explained like three times. So why did I need to see it for a half hour early? I also don't really need all this Zod information, because when he comes to Earth, he says his motivations each time. He's like, I need Superman, we're going to rebuild Krypton. He gives him a whole thing before he starts.
Right.
So he's wasting my time.
I owe my people, right? He says it all the time.
He says it all the time. It's about his people. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. No, I absolutely agree with you. I think this was I think it was a poor choice to begin the movie for 25 minutes on Krypton. I will say this for my part, it's my favorite part of the movie. I wish the whole movie was that. I think you're absolutely right. It should have been in this movie. I wish this movie was that.
that's not a bad take, really.
Yeah.
If you just give me that whole movie as a sci-fi movie.
Oh yeah.
And unravel like the politics, like the Senate body versus the scientists, like then that's just American dystopia. Like, you know, you said it in 2050. It's like, oh, this is where we're headed.
Yeah. No, I think to me, honestly, you even still make it a Superman movie. I think like the decadence of that world, and it's just 1984's Dune. Like it's just Dune. And I don't say that in a bad way, right? Like, Zack Snyder has referenced his favorite like childhood movies many times in his films. but it's very much Dune. But like even as a Jor-El and Krypton movie, I still think the way that that thing ends, with like Zod going into space and Krypton dying, I think that's a powerful into like a movie. And if that was Zack Snyder's one Superman movie, was actually this Krypton film, I think I would have no bad things to say about Zack Snyder or his work on Superman.
It's like, if it's a Jor-El movie and it's kind of about him having a kid and wanting to do his best and then the sacrifice, it's instead of a Jesus story, it's kind of a God story. And you know, the Phantom Zone is something that's been outlawed.
Mm-hmm.
But at the end of the movie, he uses it for Zod and his people. It's the only way for him to try to save the planet and to get his son off the planet. And like his final act is sending his son off the planet. Like that is a good movie, you know?
I was like, you know, like I thought there was a couple of things.
That would be such a risk though for WB.
Oh, for sure. But it would have been a great movie. Like I thought there were two things, like since, you know, we do rewrite movies or whatever, and since we're now rewriting this prologue as a movie, I was like, there are two things there that I would add to really make it strong. When like Jor-El puts on his power armor to fight off Zod and everybody, I would have somehow made it clear in the film that that was powered by yellow sun radiation. Like, just like, even though the red sun doesn't like they have a red sun on Krypton, they're not as strong as Superman can become, but like if they would have had an understanding and a harnessing of that yellow sun power in small ways, that'd be cool. You know what I'm saying? And then the second thing that I would say, especially since in the comics, I think, well, there have been many ways that Krypton has died or been destroyed, but I know there are some versions where they like sap the star for its energy, and the star explodes, not necessarily the planet. One other thing I would say is, and I wish this would have even been true for this film, but definitely would have been a stronger moment when Superman's mother dies, right? When the planet's blowing up and she says, "Make a better world than ours, Cal." He should have been able to hear that. Like they should,
it's recorded in the ship.
The ship is still within transmission range.
Yeah.
Later as an adult, he listens to the recording and it's staticky, it's garbled, but make a better world than ours, Cal. You need a reason as to why, like Jonathan and Martha Kent are already going to make Clark Kent a good man, but you need a reason why Kal-El is a God who is kind and protective. Like if you're going to have Superman, you need to have something more. And I was like, oh, you had it. But he needed to hear it. And I think this movie misses a lot of those character moments that are already there.
Well, which brings me to one of my main complaints of it. But I'll say this first.
The red sun,
yellow sun thing, like, there could be artifacts on Krypton of a yellow sun.
Right.
And they're, like, burnt. But once they get them and they do science to them, they, like, glow inside of an orb that's harnessing, like, the heat. And that's how they power, like it's like the arc reactor kind of for Tony Scott.
Yeah, exactly.
And they have these yellow sun like meteorites. And then when they, sometimes it doesn't work, but when it does work, they have these sun reactors in these like black orbs shining in this like laboratory.
Yeah. This
government laboratory. And that's what they use to power. I mean, something like that, right? That would be a cool visual.
Yeah, or even think about like Spider-Man 2, right? The power of the sun in your hands, right? Like
Doc Ock, right?
Like even what if there was no Spider-Man or Superman in this case to save it? You know what I mean? I feel like that movie as a movie would have been strong.
What's up with the fan fiction? What's up with the fan fiction? Does that comic exist? Like we have to write that novel.
Yeah, somebody's got to do that. That's awesome.
So my big complaint with Superman in this movie that I kept coming back to, which we see right away. So he lands in Kansas. He's adopted by John and Martha. And we have a lot of the stuff where he's a kid. He's getting picked on. Too much kid stuff in this movie. So it doesn't really add up to a whole lot.
No, it's too much.
He's getting picked on. I don't know why he's getting picked on. I don't know why he's getting picked on. They should make it clear why he's getting picked on. And there's, okay, so my main complaint with this is Superman's supposed to be good. They never show us that he's good in this movie.
Yep.
He rescues some people, but that doesn't mean he's good. That doesn't mean he's good. Hancock rescued people, and he was demonstrably bad. You know what I
For
mean?
sure. The point of the movie, the entire
That was the whole point of the movie. He was an asshole. Clark is quiet. He saved some people, but it's not about him being good. He's just like, oh God, I guess I gotta save these people. Each time, it's almost begrudgingly. So even when he's a kid in like the bus, it's like that storm, right?
Yeah.
They got all the kids on the bus are in trouble. It's just like, oh, I guess I should save these kids now that we're all about to die, you know?
Yeah.
It's like an obligation or a burden. But
It's an obligation and a burden.
I know
That's how this
Superman is
movie treats it.
somebody who wants to be good,
Yeah.
who is good, like you said, if his if he had that from his mom. So, also the idea in this movie that, okay, about, I don't know, 10 years old is when he finds out that he's an alien. He's like, why am I like this? And he finds out he's an
Right.
alien. I'm fine with that as an idea. I didn't love it as far as the characterization of Superman. But again, as soon as he finds that out, he's just like, oh, I'm a weirdo. We don't actually see him being weird. Then he's some kind of an outcast, but he's a good-looking kid. He's not doing anything. He's just getting bullied for no reason. The
Yeah.
kids want him to fight, but why are they? Why? And then, like I said, he doesn't do anything good on purpose. He's not trying to be a good person. He's trying to hide, which is okay, but is that Superman?
I think that's an important question. I know there's a lot of Superman fans who really don't like this movie because of that, like hiding versus being a good person. And I think they really saddle Kevin Costner and his kind of performance with some of that. I think this movie has a lot of interesting. It's like a visceral, interesting take on the subject matter that doesn't always pan out. And I do agree, like I don't know, I think this movie, I think by the time I get to the end of Man of Steel, I feel like it's not the Superman movie I would have wanted, but I think it's a Superman movie that there's a lot of stuff in there that I enjoy. But I do think that as some of these themes continue, and we're talking about Man of Steel, but honestly, you can't talk about it, I think, without talking about the whole Zack Snyder kind of Superman DC thing, a little bit at least. And I think as these movies kind of continue and these themes continue, you really start to see, look, watching this movie with hindsight, I really see a lot of his themes present in it. And I think what you're talking about being good is one of them, because, for Zack Snyder, it seems, at least within his work, I obviously don't know the man or have ever had a personal conversation, but in his work, it seems that he believes that heroism comes solely through power, not moral righteousness or values or goodness or any of those things. It's about power. And I think you said those words, it's a duty, it's an obligation, it's a burden. It's an obligation and a burden. And I hadn't thought about that, but I think that's on point too. He thinks heroism is about the burden of power. And I don't know that it is. I think we've been getting 80 years of Superman that's been telling us different. But, that's a kind of a passive aggressive joke. But you know what I mean?
Scathing
Like,
critique.
but yeah, I do think that your question is super valid. I think there's a lot of interesting stuff here that's like, yeah, interesting, visceral sci-fi take on Superman. Where's the goodness? Where are those things that make, we talked about it on franchise talks before, right? But like, there are certain franchise rules that you have to establish. Otherwise, that character
For
is not
sure.
that character, right? Batman becomes Punisher very quickly if he doesn't have certain rules that make Batman Batman. And one of those rules is that goodness of Superman, that desire to do good. And I do feel that that's missing here. And the last thing I'll say on this is, like, another interesting take, I think, is one that highlights this is, like, I think it's an interesting take to think about. Yeah. Superman's a human. He has human emotions. He's got a bit of an anger problem. I think that's interesting.
Yeah.
But when it becomes the entire film, you've missed the point, I think.
Yeah. And his anger is kind of triggered. I don't know. And why is he always getting bullied? This dude is jacked. He's 6'3", 6'4". People don't pick on, like, the beginning where he's on his fishing boat, basically.
Yeah.
And then he gets off, he's on the land, and, like, the people at the bar are, like, antagonizing him. It's like, no, man. This guy is huge.
He's absolutely huge.
You don't know he's super powered, but he's freaking huge, man.
As a human-powered person, someone that tall with that many muscles, like, he doesn't need to be super powered. He's got human power.
You're not running up on him. And also, why? Why did they try to fight him?
Yeah.
What did he do? He didn't do anything. Or he stood up for the waitress. It's like, so now they want to fight him?
Right.
That was just, like, kind of a jump. And it was just, like, to show him, like, getting upset. And then, like, his retaliation. I was like, no, that's weak, man. And to me, I was like, that's weak.
Yeah.
Oh, go ahead.
I was just going to say, it does call into question, I think, like, as the writers and the filmmakers, the artists who are behind us, the creatives, it does fall into question, like, what are those inner motivations that are going on in their brain as they're writing? Like, what filter is this being filtered through? Because it always strikes me that, like, why would Superman be so mad about little bullying? It doesn't affect him.
Why would he care? This guy threw a can at him. Also, why didn't he turn around and catch the can or something? Like, if it's going to bother you, you can hear it. The Superman.
Right.
Don't you get hit by a can?
Yeah, I mean, like, if a 5'8 dude stands up to Superman, right? You know what I mean? Like, the guy in the bar, 5'8 skinny dude. Like, why would he be in any way upset or threatened in a way that would prompt anger? Anger is usually a threat response. You know what I mean? Like, there are just things like that that, you know, I take these DC characters especially very seriously. And when I just feel like when you don't engage with these characters seriously, you don't give them any sort of emotional agency, weight, or valence. You know what I mean? They're just acting with power.
Oh, like, yeah. It lacks a characterization. It's just like, oh, somebody threw a can at him, so he's mad. It's very like AB, you know? When you're like that much more powerful, like, I'm a huge guy. It's not like Superman, but, like, yeah, I'm not saying it takes a lot for me to get upset, but sometimes when you so overmatch somebody, you're not like, if only I could get them back. You're just like, yo, I'm glad I didn't touch that person. It would have been a wrap. And Superman's got to live with that all the time.
Right. Exactly.
You know?
Exactly. I think it's, you know, I think there's an interesting writer's voice behind these characterizations, right? Because it's like, this Superman is, like, mainly angry because he can't hit people. You know? Yeah. It's like, well, why does he want to so hard?
Why does he want to so bad?
And, like,
just because he was bullied as a kid?
Right. I think also,
that's another.
Yeah.
There's two white male fantasies we just skipped over here and to keep up with the pod. Being like, oh, I'm trying to hide, so I'm going to go work on a fishing boat in the middle of the Arctic or across the world or over Maine or something. That's a very white male fantasy.
It's like, and then he's in a logging town, and it's very much, I was like, these are very specific choices.
And everybody's super white.
Oh, for sure. I mean, I don't live in a logging town, but I can't imagine there's a ton of them in the Pacific Northwest that are heavily black.
So, like,
or other.
Such a white male fantasy. And also the idea that, like, you're going to go to this small community and hide. It's like, then that whole community kind of knows you're Superman. And like, if you're really doing it, they kind of know you have, you're different. This community didn't know. If you want to hide, you have to go to the city. He should be. That's
In the
why
city.
Clark was in Metropolis in the comics, because you have to
Right.
hide among a bunch of people. So if you do something weird, they're just like, that's a weird New York thing. Not
Right.
that guy is can lift the house. You know what I mean? They're gonna
Right.
notice that out in the country. That's why you
Yeah,
have
if
to
you're out in the
go from town
country,
to
I mean,
town.
if you're out in the country, I mean, like, it's only a matter of time before something happens that should have killed you, right? Like, you slide off a ditch in your car, or like it's just like there's not as much like buffer for safety, you know what I mean? And so, like, yeah, at some point, you're gonna have something that should injure you and doesn't, and a lot of people are gonna know about it. I wanted to jump in there though, because I think this touch back on the characterization piece. There were a couple things in this movie that really stuck out to me as having difficulty like answering its own questions or engaging with its own questions, right? And I think you make a great point. Like, there's a bunch of people who've seen his face, right? And like, it doesn't ever actually engage with that, right? Like, it doesn't engage what that means. We don't see like one of those fishermen or something, or people in an oil rig, you know what I mean? Watch Superman on TV from their home and be like, it's him. You know what I mean? Like, there's no engagement with some of the questions that it, you know, kind of brings up. I also thought about like there's like a part where his dad's like, I took this to a this little metal thing to a med med metal, I don't know, somebody who
Metal
studies
churches?
metallurgist, I don't know how you, anyways, but he takes it to someone who studies metal at Kansas State. He says the person told him that the metal it was made of isn't even on the what is it, the periodic table of elements, meaning it's not from Earth. The person who spends his life researching metal his entire life never told anyone that he had an actual piece of non-periodic material in his hands, an alien piece of metal. He never told anybody that. And it's like, there's just like, it never engages with like, again, it breezes past the things that it maybe should spend some time on. It overexplains the things that we don't need to see.
Because also in this one, he doesn't have a secret identity.
Yeah, there's no secret identity.
But the alien, so it doesn't matter who he really is, because he has no life. He's off the globe. He's been hiding his identity. But
She
then
literally says
Zod,
he's a cipher, a mystery.
which is such another, this is like another like mainstream fantasy thing, you know? So mysterious. I gotta go from the
He's
ground and
off
find out who I
the
am and travel the world and backpack through Europe.
grid.
Zod attack, they attack Martha's farm. We know he's Clark Kent. The world knows he's Clark Kent. It doesn't matter.
A
Why
huge
did they
alien
attack
ship.
her farm in the middle of Kansas? Nothing else. Come on, man. You've been on TikTok, you've been on YouTube. Conspiracy theorists would have been like, okay, so she had a son.
Right. This is her
There's no
son.
birth record.
Here's two pictures side by side.
Talk to some people that he went to high school with, and apparently, yeah, Clark Kent is Superman, which doesn't matter because who the f it's Clark Kent. We don't know who this guy is. He's nobody in the world, you know?
And I think also, who cares if you know he's Superman? He's literally powerful enough to destroy an entire city. You can't leverage it.
So they erased like this whole part of the mythos of Superman of having a secret identity and did nothing with it.
Right. They don't engage with it. Like, it's there, but it's just breezed by.
So, which also brings us to Lois.
Yeah.
Why do they like each other in this movie?
Couldn't tell you. They have no chem. Well, not that they have no chemistry. There's some chemistry, but
I think it
they have no real meeting that matters.
like
He saves her
him be
life.
him being Clark was essential to him being in love with Lois Lane.
Yes.
Him working at the Daily Planet is key because he sees her every day and he's always impressed by her, and she represents something to him. And she's fiery where he can't be. She's loud where he can't be.
Yeah.
And when he's Superman, especially like in the first movie, he purposely makes it clear to her that she's a priority to him. In this
Yeah.
one, she's only a priority because she's always in the mix.
Yeah.
He doesn't go and
'Cause
save her, especially she's the one in danger. Like,
it's
because of her own actions.
no, you're right. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt. No, yeah, absolutely. And I think it's interesting. It's like they just kind of end up together because she's the person who knows, right?
Yeah.
Like she knows who he is. She figured it out. And it's like, again, it wasn't that this isn't he's not a hacker. You know what I mean? Like I mean, he just went on the road and used cash, right? He wasn't going to stay off the
Yeah.
grid, you know, off the map forever. So,
Superman
and
was
that, I'm sorry, that's,
the early Bitcoin investor, Superman.
yeah, the montage of her like going to like all of the places that we've already been with Superman and asking
Yeah.
questions is hilarious because it's like, why is she in that Nova Scotia town? Like, what would have led her
What led her there? Why was
that
she
there?
there? Oh, just word of mouth led me here. It's like, that's not how,
No.
like, you would have had to follow his like receipts.
You're an award-winning journalist and they paid for you to go there. Don't you have a story you should be working on? It's yeah, it's no, that's funny. I wanted to get touch back on another one of these sort of like, you know, he has no secret identity moments that I thought really was a missed opportunity. This movie overplays the Christ metaphor far too hard. I mean, it's just everywhere. But like the scene where he goes into the church and like talks to the priest and like basically kind of without admitting it admits to the priest that he is the alien that the aliens are looking for. And like that scene again is from a comic book. It's can't remember. I think it's just from the regular Superman run. Brian Azzarello, Jim Lee, can't remember the name of that storyline, but that scene is almost lifted exactly word for word from that comic, with him meeting this priest. And it's like that scene in that comic mattered because of the storyline that was happening in that comic run. And it doesn't matter at all in this movie. And like there was an opportunity for them to like make that like the priest in Smallville. Hey, Clark, haven't seen you around. Didn't know you were back in town. Right. Like they could have made some sort of emotional character connection for that moment. They chose not to. It just became about repeating the Christ metaphor that they'd already done a couple of times and would do a couple of times more. You know what I mean? And I feel like there are many of these things where Zack Snyder is a really great filmmaker when it comes to putting images on screen, when it comes to like painting that canvas and having it be interesting and visceral and relevant. You know what I mean? Wonderful composition and lighting and all of these things. But there's just like this technical aspect that is like missing so much heart. And it
Yeah.
really shows up in the character that is built on heart.
And it's like he's good at emotion in the moment, but not in building to that emotion, to that emotion, so that it's a stronger payoff, you know?
Yeah, so that it feels like connective in any sort of way.
And almost every scene is a big emotion, you know, instead of like guiding us there, you know? Yeah, the priest scene is just kind of feels random, out of place.
Super.
Which made me think of, while you were talking, I was thinking about Zod, first of all. And Zod is just like fury, rage.
Rage. They got
And
the right
that makes it,
actor.
Michael Shannon is tough.
Yeah, Michael Shannon does rage like nobody else, man.
But even as a villain, he needed some range,
He
you
did,
know,
yeah.
and even some logic of like he's just like, oh, we're here, we're just gonna take over Earth. Like he couldn't see there's a possibility for greater power through Earth. Like he was kind of too gung-ho about just like destroying Earth for Krypton and not even doing his
Yeah.
research on like the best way to do it. You know, it was just like, yep.
Yeah.
And Superman, Clark, talks to the priest and then he just goes to meet Zod. But like I guess I don't understand Superman's conflict in this movie. This idea that he doesn't want to help, or that when the opportunity arises with these people from his home planet, he has to ask a priest if it's the right thing to do. What else are you going to do? What else are you gonna do? They're looking for you. They're gonna find you. Let's say you can hide and they don't find you. Then they're just gonna destroy Earth. Like, you at this point, in terms of obligation and burden, I don't know why you have to ask a priest. And like the other times he did, he didn't ask anybody to help, but that fishing boat was going down. He just went and did it. When he asked his dad, like non-verbally, his dad said, "No, don't save me," and just stood there and got swallowed up by a tornado, which is an insane scene. He didn't ask
for sure.
anybody when he helped the kids on the bus. It's like, by having that be inconsistent of like him deciding if he should or shouldn't help, it weakens every decision he makes. And then the other thing about Superman is he's not saving life, even in his fights. Like all those fighter planes get shot down, those guys die. He doesn't bust in those planes and save the pilots, you know? In the big fights, and even in the small town, and then in Metropolis, like there's collateral damage. People are dying there.
Sure.
I did
That's not a
another
priority.
post, and I told you about the idea of like the villain is complex and has a plan, and that plan may require sacrifice. And a good guy is like, well, I have to defeat the villain because he kills. He's too simple-minded. He doesn't have a ethos of why he wants to save everything. But then he also kills through collateral damage and trying to stop the bad guy. So he's really just as bad as the bad guy. If you're not saving people, you are killing people as a
We
hero of
talk
this magnitude.
totally. We talked about this like a week ago, just offline, right? About you really have to make the moral arg. You have to win the or more. You have to win the moral argument in like the space of like the text, whether that text be, you know, a film or a novel or a script or whatever. And that's not done. And I think this movie is a really great example of that. Like the villain feels like we get to see all these scenes of like the villain feeling like he's justified and making his political argument, which I would argue is wrong, but like he gets to voice it, right? He gets to argue for his perspective. And at no point does Superman really argue for his perspective other than to say Krypton had its chance, like at the
Oh
end,
my goodness.
right? And like that was a moment to have Superman say, you know, Earth needs a chance, right? Like you could have literally changed
That
it
was not a
that
great line.
simple. It's a terrible, it's not a great line, but it's like
Because
to
because Superman, it makes Superman kind of evil.
it's callous.
It's callous.
And there's a callousness to this version of Superman in the world that I'm sure, you know, the macho kind of aggro like society that we sometimes live in loves to be like, well, you know, that's just the way the real world works. Well, this guy flies. He's an alien. It's not the real
And
world. And we can talk about something, right?
like, if that's the way the real world works, that's not necessarily the way that everybody believes. That's the way things happen. So he could say any number of things, and the same result could happen. But what he says determines his character. And if he says, like you said, this planet deserves its own chance, or if he said, I can't save everybody, you know,
You know
something
what I mean?
that's like, I want to save Krypton, but you've made it, and I have to make a choice, otherwise we will all die. It's kind of is different than just saying, Krypton, I ain't really been there, dog. So y'all was all right, but I'm Earth. You know what I mean? That's kind of like, it's kind of flipping in that way.
It's super flippant, and it's and I think it's interesting to
Or, I
get.
mean, Callus was a better, was, you know, that's what it is.
No, absolutely. I think it's a really great, you know, as a bad line, it's a really good distillation of kind of the perspective on this character in this film, right? Because Superman is a symbol, and the words that symbols make matter, right, even if they're people too, right? Like, you know, someone with power, their words carry weight. Their intention carries weight. And I don't want to jump on a societal soapbox, but I think that especially in our storytelling over the past, you know, I'd say 20 years, as far as movies and TV and film and or movies and TV and books and things like that, our hero stories, I really believe that, like, this idea that, you know, the road to hell is paved with good intentions, like, gets a lot of, like, it gets a lot of, like, limelight. But, like, the fact of the matter is intent matters, right? And hero stories are the place to make that argument. Intent matters, right? You're not a paragon just because you're strong enough.
Yeah, you're supposed to represent something. And like you said, these stories are, and so this brings me to something I thought about during this movie. This, the trend to make superhero movies realistic, in a sense, or like, what's the most real version of these, you know, unreal things? I don't think that it paid off, really. I think also maybe we'll get into this another time, like the Nolan Batman trilogy suffers because of this, I think. Leaning too heavily on, like, it's got to be real. And I think it's George Lucas that has a great quote of, like, adults really can't live in the world of fantasy long enough. They always try to make something real or justify it. But these stories are symbolic. They are mythologies.
Yeah.
And they're supposed to represent an ideal, or it's like a grim fairy tale and it's like a foible, you know? It's like,
right.
But even something like that teaches a lesson about a seven deadly sin. Don't be too greedy. Don't, you know, something.
No.
So trying to make it real also brings me to the CGI. And I was like, man, somebody had a post of, like, this is another example of how AI is going to take every Hollywood job. And it was some, you know, clip of something. I don't remember what.
Yeah.
And I was like, of all the power potential of AI, using it to take jobs of filmmakers, people in Hollywood, seems like the worst use of it, the most pointless use of it. And CGI in this movie really made me think, like, there's a better use of CGI than trying to make these things look real, you know?
Yeah.
And I don't know how that applies to this movie. And it's not just about doing more animated movies or something, but there's has to be another way to look at it that benefits the power and the possibility of CGI rather than what was done in this movie. And of course, this movie looks great, and it's not just about this movie, it's about Marvel movies, it's about other superhero movies, but I really caught on to that this time. I'm like, this is what we're using CGI for, just to try to make things look real?
It's funny that you say that, right? Because, like, basically anytime Superman is moving in this movie, the cape isn't real, right? Because they wanted it to move like kind of a cinematic cape. And all of the Kryptonians, all that armor and stuff that they're wearing is all CGI. Like, if you ever see pictures from set, they're just wearing motion capture suits the entire shoot, basically. And so
that sucks, kind of. I'm gonna be honest.
Yeah, you should look up pictures. It's just them in, like, gray leotards. but, like, it is interesting, right? Because I think this is, you know, even you not necessarily knowing that it's a great example of what you were saying, right? Like, they spent building in CGI what they could have just built in real life, and it still would have looked just as good in a movie. And they could have been using CGI for other things. I think one thing I've been paying attention to over the past, like, month or so, is that CGI is used a lot where it doesn't need to be. Like, there's still space to make things, like, physically.
I think so. And it's not even like, I don't know. I don't have the answer to that, and I'm not
sure.
But it's just like, computer generate. There's just a more specific use for it.
Yeah.
It's kind of like when they used to have like iPhone programs that look like what they're replicating
Yeah.
before they started to change that. It's like, oh, why does my notes app look like a notebook? It doesn't have to look like that.
Right. Yeah.
It's like there's a better use for what for a phone's display than making it try to be exactly like the real world model. But you have to go through that to figure it out. The
Yeah,
notes
like
app
when
might
the
still look like a notebook actually, but I think it functions a little differently now.
it's like when the it's like when the YouTube app used to be like an old tube TV, the icon. It's, it's one thing, just thinking about some of these things we were talking about, even the loss of life. Much has been made about the destruction of the city, and I was willing to accept some of that. Always, I was never as angry about it as others. But just again, the fact that it's not, the preservation of life is not a priority. Like I can accept that buildings will collapse when two superpowered beings are fighting one another, but like just the idea that it's not like a priority of Superman's to do as much as he can, is, especially watching it again, it stands out. And really, the attack on Smallville was the one that really stood out to me this time, because it's like I needed to see a scene of the president authorizing a strike on a Midwest American farming town. Like, I don't believe that that just happened, right? Like, that's a deliberation. You know what I mean? This all-white Kansas farming town. Again, like, just there were certain things that in this rush to make it so real, the irreality, the unreality of it stood out more. You know what I mean? It's like for me to buy that, I would have needed to see the president in the white in the Oval Office saying, nuke the town or something like that. You know what I mean?
You could even hear it like this is something I was playing with. You could hear it from Superman. He can hear the jets coming and hear their chatter, you know? And they're like, what do we do? He's like, the president said strike, you know, something. You could do it without adding another scene, you know?
And that would make it, to me, I think, interesting, because like what happens when Superman really has to rise above and make that better world that his mother told him, which might involve literally having to, if not attack, but disable those planes, right? Like, and now he's attacked US soldiers. Like, there's things that it tries to do, and I'm sure, of course, like it looks like they had some real military weapons in there, so they had US military cooperation likely on the shoot. I'm sure you can't show Superman attacking a plane.
Sure,
But
I'm
at the same time, like to your point, like what happens if like Superman has to at least disable those planes or like utilize his pop, like we talked about his characterization being uneven. His power set is always so uneven. 'Cause like people aren't thinking about what it's like to have all those powers at the same time all the time.
it's like showing one power at a time. In a film, it's very
It's like,
like even a writer mindset is like I can only write one line for, you know what I mean? And it gets complicated when you start stacking things, but
well, even like I think about the end, right? He kills Zod and by breaking his neck. And I was again fine with that. Like, I understand that there could be a character who's so powerful that Superman has to kill. I'm willing to sit with that, but the movie doesn't sit with it. But even in that scene, like Zod's using his heat vision and he's going across the room to like kill this family, and Superman has to kill him. And it's like he literally could have just turned his eyes. Like he could have just turned his eyes. He didn't, like not thinking about what the second order effects of that power could be, like literally him just turning his eyes and not having to have this slow creep of a threat, like a
Trying
ticking
to make it
time
dramatic.
bomb. You know what I mean?
Like they tried to build in drama and it's kind of sacrificed the power that we were witnessing.
And the internal, like, logical consistency.
And so for Superman, one, I don't know that he's against killing.
Yeah, that's fair.
That's work that I have to do. that I'm bringing to the movie if I know Superman. He never says, like,
I
I want to be
appreciate
a
that.
hero, but I'm worried about collateral damage. He never says, like, I just don't want anybody to get hurt. He never,
He never
I
says
don't
that.
know that. I don't know that he wants to save people. Like, so when he
Seems like he
kills
just wants
Jor-El,
to chill out in
he kind of just wants to be left alone, you
Alberta.
know? He wants to just be left alone and find purpose in his life, which that's fine, but that's, I think that's also actually a different, that's a setup to a different movie and a different character.
Yeah.
Like, when Zod comes, he's like, I'm gonna stand up and fight. And he's like, what do you want? You know, he's like,
Yeah.
toughen up. He almost should go to Zod like, what's up, man? Hey, welcome to Earth. Yeah, so I'm from Krypton too. You know, maybe, you know, let's talk. Let's chat for a second real quick.
Right.
'Cause he doesn't know how to fight. He's never been in a fight. We know that.
Right.
And Zod really
Also
hadn't
that.
really threatened him like yet. He's just like, we want the kid from our planet. That's all he said. And he goes up there like, he's almost antagonizing. Like, why are you coming up so brolic, bro? Relax.
Yeah, again, there's a lot, it's very aggro in that sense. It's even like I was watching it this time with subtitles on. I think it's the first time I've ever done that. And there's that scene where, like, you know, Zod attacks Martha Kent, and he like flies in. He's like hitting Zod, and he's like, "You think you can threaten my mother?" I always thought that line was, "You think you can threaten my mother?" And when I was watching it with subtitles, it's, "You think you can frighten my mother?" And that one word really changes it, because it's like, I was willing to buy that Superman Clark Kent could be consumed with anger that someone would literally put his mother under threat in that moment. And I was like, oh yeah, that's kind of a cool little scene, right? But then, like, you think you can frighten my mother, like, that's almost more of like, that's more, there's more ego there.
Yeah.
It's more about ego than it is fear for
It's
the
very
loved
almost
one.
like Godfather, you know?
Yeah.
You think you frighten my people? That's not
Yeah,
a,
you
that's a
think
terrible, terrible
it's a terrible New York accent.
accent, yeah. Think you
For
can
sure.
come around here, talk to my people?
Right.
Hey, yeah, knock you out, man. Don't even show your
Speaking
face around here, you know?
of DC Comics, it sounds like the
I'm a penguin, yeah. And
Penguin.
so he also does something just completely amazing. He satisfies both father figures in the movie, which I think that's a mistake, especially since it's so much about being a father in this movie. Also, okay, so Kent, that Kevin Costner is like, don't save me
Yeah,
with the
Jonathan Kent.
tornado. Jonathan Kent. And it's like, he should have saved him. He could have flown in there, flown up and out, and landed somewhere else. And when they found John, he could have been like, the tornado just threw me. I was spinning around and it threw me across the county. Good Lord. You know? An easy thing to like lie about. He didn't have, they didn't have to watch him die. And then Jonathan Kent is also confusing because he's like, yeah, you're going to change the world. You're going to be so powerful. Again, they dropped the same way they didn't have that mom line. Why is he so conflicted when John Kent was telling him he was going to change the world over and over again? But John was also like, don't use your powers. That's a conflicting message, man. You know, I get like, so John also needs to state like, this kind of goes back to the secret identity that to do what you need to do, you have to be somebody else to get, so he establishes a secret identity there. Or if John Clark saves him and he loves him and he's happy to be alive, he's kind of mad at him for the rest of his life. He's like, you did the wrong, you know what I mean? Like, you have to be more in control. You have to, and he's like, even as an alive father, he's like, Clark, I told you to, you know what I mean? And when he's fighting them and they come in, if he's still alive, he's like, Clark, calm down. You know, he has to always be telling them to like get your emotions under control, and he becomes a stabilizing force, you know?
Yeah, I agree. I think there it's very conflicted. As part of me appreciated the conflict, I just think that they didn't, like many things, they never really saw it all the way through. They spent a lot of time with it without seeing it all the way through. But like, because I get the idea, like, okay, so Jonathan Kent, Martha Kent, these characters, at least, you know, me bringing my comic book baggage to it, right? These are characters who always wanted to be parents. Kind of like their whole lives. But
couldn't have their own kid.
But couldn't have their own kid. Tried and tried and tried and tried. And then one day a miracle happens, right? And I understand the fear of loss that a person like that could have of this miracle child that they've been delivered, right? I get that. And I also get that knowledge, that kind of sense that most parents have, that their kid's going to go up to be something special. You know what I mean?
For sure.
And they showcased both, but again, it just didn't engage with that in the best way. The tornado scene, personally, I actually don't necessarily have a story problem with him choosing to sacrifice himself to preserve Clark's secret identity. I wouldn't have done a tornado. It needed to be something much less epic, because otherwise, why is it a tornado unless Superman's going to fly up in the middle of the tornado and do some sort of crazy Wizard of Oz tornado scene?
Yeah, where it's the easiest thing for him to either save somebody or stop or something, because there's such a cloud of, they can hide his identity. That's his whole thing.
That's his whole thing, you know, and I agree with you. I would have kind of wished that he would have saved him anyways. And I think it would have been not only a lesson about understanding that there were times where he couldn't use his powers, but there were also times where he needed to anyways, no matter the threat to his identity.
Yeah. Because that is literally bookended by a scene that he does it as a kid,
mm-hmm.
and a scene that he does it again as an adult on the fishing boat. I keep calling it a fishing boat. I know it had a better name, but
sure.
So those were two times when John wasn't around that he used his powers kind of with abandon.
Mm-hmm.
And then John tells him no. So it's like, again, it's kind of like back and forth.
There was
not that it always has to be one thing. I just need like the motivation for each one to be something other than the obligation of, oh, people are in trouble, you know?
Here's the thing. There was no role model for him in this movie. And as much time as we spent in his childhood, it's really kind of crazy that none of those scenes had anybody role modeling like the person he should be. And you really don't kind of get the sense, even with the mother, until he's already an adult. And you kind of get the sense that she was a good role model from their relationship and their interactions. But I thought it was interesting, like you talk about in the beginning when he's on the fishing boat, like he gets saved by one of the other fishermen when a cage falls, right? Pushes him out of the way. And I was like, that's a really interesting way to showcase like these kind of one-on-one human interactions with people that make Superman understand that there's something good about humanity and there's something that he can arise to himself. But it was really a strange choice that there, I don't even know that that was the intentional point of that scene or that we didn't see any more of that. We don't see a lot of good, not just out of Superman, but out of a lot of people in this. So it's like, where does it come from?
Yeah, like, whatever you want to say about that's the way the world is, there's still like traditional goodness in the world.
There are good people all the time.
And like, yeah, even Jonathan Kent could have been like, you know, and he's telling them you're going to change the world or whatever. And Clark just asks how. If he's like, you can save so many people.
Yeah.
He's like, save people how? He's like, you'll know when the time is right. Something like that, you know?
Yeah. You're indestructible. You're strong. You can do it, right?
Because again, in terms of his like morality, his motivation, he's just trying to stop Zod. He's not trying to save Earth. You know what I mean? Like, it's not clear that he cares so much about Earth. He just wants to stop Zod because Zod is doing bad.
Mm-hmm.
But if he believes Earth as a place the potential for so much goodness, and he's going to represent that goodness. The whole S is supposed to be a symbol of hope. It's not an S, it's a crest, a symbol of hope. that's really what his driving force needs to be. And when he finds out about his like home planet and meets his dad, that's the message that needs to be given. And Russell Crowe just kind of gives us expository
Expository.
talk, but he needs to be like, I saved you because you're the last, you're a symbol. You know, there's something about him being a symbol of hope and a symbol of goodness in the universe. And like, I try to be good. And you know what I mean? Like that, it all has to tie in to like the same theme and not just everything. Everything is just obligation. Everything is out. Nobody really has a choice or makes a choice in this movie. It's just like, I just got to do it because this happened and everybody's reacting. And I think that's, well, it's interesting, right? As a screenwriter, that's actually not great screenwriting. And as somebody, you know, I wrote, co-wrote Creed, and I was looking at Creed after earlier last year, and I was like, oh, I don't know that Creed really is great screenwriting by a lot of these screenwriting rules either. There's a lot of things like he's not a super active protagonist, and sometimes things happen to him is kind of coincidental or favorable for like the plot of the story. So it's not, I'm not criticizing this movie saying that that can never happen, but it kind of happens to every character all the time. Oh, and one other thing, when the aliens was clear that there's aliens on Earth and whether they're a threat or not, the rest of the whole world is kind of chill. They're kind of chill until the aliens do something. Like, I've been thinking about first contact stories and writing some on my Substack, and like, no, people will freak out. The whole world should have like stopped when Zod came, and everybody would have been like, what? Am I going to work to like panic in the streets? But we cut back to like Daily Planet, and he's just like, Lois, you can't run that story. It's like, what? Everybody's running these stories now. Like, what are you talking about? The world is in chaos. We got aliens, and they don't seem like they want to chit chat.
They're not here. They're not here for Sunday tea, right? Like
But like
that. Go
and
ahead.
there's an aspect of like a disaster happening and people going about their lives as normal, but we would all be talking about it. You know what I mean? We would all still be existing in this world of like, you know, people, even just people walking on the street being like, because like there's drones in Jersey right now that people are like,
Freaking out
these are
about.
alien orbs. These are not drones. And like people are freaking out about it. It's not normal. And these haven't even like, if they were aliens, they're not talking to us. Zod talked and said, yo, one of us is
I
on your
talked
planet.
first.
He talked first. He was like, one of us is here and we're going to find them. People would have been like, yo, my cousin is really strange, man. I think he's probably the, you know what I mean?
I think that's hilarious because I think it's for all the gritty realism, right, of these sorts of films that again are not grittily real because they are fantasy. And no matter how real they make it, there's always that fantasy. But like honestly, if it was gonna really go there, I mean, do you imagine like how many like just crimes against humanity would happen? Like, you know what I mean? Like, whole villages rounded up. You know what I mean? Like, people would use that as an excuse to do terrible, terrible things. You know what I mean? Like, and again, that's, I think, another one of these cases in which by trying to be so realistic, it poses questions that it's unwilling to fully engage with. I wanted to jump back to the, you know, the symbol meaning hope. Right, the S means hope, and I think if I remember correctly, I believe that's an original contribution from this film. I don't think that exists in the lore before this movie, and I think it's beautiful. I think it's a beautiful addition to the Superman mythos, and it's been used by others since. But yeah, I mean, think about the sort of motivating factor it would be if in that scene when Jor-El was like getting to know, he was getting to know Jor-El or whatever, and he's learning about Krypton and learning about his family. If he like literally tells him, you know, that symbol on your chest, it's a legacy, it's a family legacy, right?
Right.
You know, so there should be a symbol of hope and goodness in the universe, and that's what the House of El stands for. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And again, I just find myself coming back to all these places where I see the opportunity, the missed opportunity to create some real character-based motivation for why this character exists.
Why are we telling this story?
Yeah, because it doesn't really exist in this film.
I think that's a great question, because, you know, I go in to pitch a movie or something and they're like, why this story right now? And I kind of think minority filmmakers get asked that more.
Sure.
I think. But it is, it's a common question. That probably came up during this movie, and I couldn't tell you why that Superman movie exists when it did. You know, was there too, did they think there was too much hope? Obama brought too much hope, and they were like, there actually is no hope in the universe. And this is a kind of a foreshadowing, like, what comes after that president, where we like lose hope. I mean, maybe that was the point, that this was actually a warning that people aren't buying the hope thing anymore.
Honestly, I mean, I think there's something there, right? Like, you know, I've heard Snyder in a few interviews, he has a very cynical view of kind of superheroics in general. And I think that's not a critique against him. I think he's reflective of other people in society, right? Like we're all reflective of something. Even when I was watching, I was just gonna say, even like in the beginning when like Zod is screaming at the Kryptonian council, like this is too close for comfort. I'm uncomfortable. Like this seems like what's happening in my world.
It's not almost like, oh man, what was I gonna say? What was I gonna say? You can make The Boys, or Invincible, though. Yeah. And I'm not even saying Invincible is like The Boys. Invincible has a lot of hope, but it has a lot of like gruesomeness too.
Yeah, definitely.
And you can make an Omni-Man, but I think the challenge with Superman, or any existing IP, which we talk about franchises and IP, the challenge is to make the themes of that thing relevant today.
Yes.
So if you have a critique on superheroes, I mean, he did Watchmen.
Yeah.
He did a Watchmen movie. That was your critique. Now you're doing Superman. You're supposed to make Superman relevant, not skewer Superman, not rake him over the coals and be like, he's got to murder and he's got to be like this, because that's a different character. I'm sorry. That's a different character. No other hero, done by Zack Snyder, has gotten that treatment in their movie. There's no Spider-Man movie that skewers Spider-Man and he's like not the friendly neighborhood Spider-Man. He's a jerk. And he's like webbing people's mouths closed so they suffocate. Like nobody else has done that. Even Snyder's Batman is closer to the legacy of Batman than the legacy of Superman.
I think that's
like he does make Batman a kind of unrepentant killer, but I think over the course of his movies he's still like solving problems. You know, he's still trying to do what's best, even though he has harsh methods. You know, it's still not quite Batman, but it's closer, I think, than some of the Superman stuff is to me.
Oh, for sure. And I think, I mean, there's a scene in Batman versus Superman where like Clark is undercover at some like fight, or I'm sorry, Bruce Wayne is undercover at some fight club or whatever. And I remember in the movie, while I had already by that point of the movie kind of turned on it, remember that being one of those scenes where I was like, yeah, this is another great addition. Like, we actually get to see a Batman movie where Batman does some detective work. You know what I mean? Like,
right. There was some cool stuff with Batman, Superman, and in the Justice League. I think especially the Snyder Cut for Batman.
I agree. Well, there was something that you had just said that reminded me of something, but I can't really remember. One thing I will say is Feyora as a henchwoman, awesome character, really badass. Her speech about like, you know, the fact that you have a moral compass gives us an evolutionary advantage and everyone always knows, or an evolution always wins. That's a very childish understanding of how evolution works. And I just think that there's something about this, even in that line again, where it's just like, it's an evolutionary advantage, or is it just he's chosen to have people in the world? You know what I mean? Like, something about the perspective of the film and the dialogue continues to have some of those more cynical, cynical outlooks.
It brings me back to James Cameron argument when we talked about that.
Oh yeah.
Or like kind of how as a white artist, creative, you're allowed to have glaring blind spots in your logics and justifications and in your characters. You know, the logic of just somebody who doesn't have to consider other people or even people under disadvantaged, really. And disadvantage just comes from your own idea of suffering. Like if you're a wealthy kid that like backpacked through Europe or got out of college and you were broke, but you still had family to go to, that becomes a perspective rather than a perspective of somebody that didn't have any advantages and was in a similar situation or like broke or whatever. Those are two different, completely different perspectives. And when you're like, yeah, this is evolution, then it's like, oh, so you just believe basically, and kind of getting back to the topic of like the podcast, is like, oh, that white people came over here and dominated America and took over
it's
in a
evolution.
Couple years. You know, that was just the natural order, and you believe in manifest destiny, and that's what happened.
Yeah.
You don't have to like engage with any real history or facts.
Questions.
Or even like first account journals of the Europeans who say, oh man, we're not going to make it. Like it took 300 years for them to become America, you know? Like it wasn't like, well, we had a couple battles we won and Europe is, you know, now we're here. And then we became America. It's like, you know, that took like multiple generations. It's like 350 years, man.
Yeah, 350 years. And, or even the fact that not everybody was down for it.
People only fought in the Revolutionary War because like, that was a job.
Yeah,
they didn't
absolutely.
have like jobs back then. They could like, we'll give you, you know, $5 and a pair of boots. And people were like, boots?
No.
On my feet? And they were like, yeah, sign me up, dog. Like,
sign
I
me
haven't
up.
Had boots. Mm. I had one pair of boots when I was, I haven't had boots 15, 20 years.
I haven't eaten in a week. Sign me up. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Let me get some victuals, man.
Well, I think about like, you know, Christopher Columbus, right? He's the kind of great example, right? The icon of all of this sort of Western colonial idea. And like, he wrote his own memoirs and told his own story, and he makes himself quite the hero. But there were people who worked for him, other captains of other ships, other sailors that were with him that wrote their own personal ship's journals and published their own memoirs later in life. There's a few of them who are like, this guy is horrible. Like, he's treating these people terrible.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, he told us to march out and kill this village. I won't do it. You know what I mean? So like, yeah, it doesn't, these kind of, this lack of nuance, it does not, it just doesn't account for questions. You said it doesn't account for actual history, and it just doesn't account for questioning
like,
the historical narrative we've been given.
Or even like people having different points of view. So if she's like, this is evolution, we are evolution or whatever, then Clark is like, that doesn't mean we kill everybody that's uninvolved. You know, like with great power comes great. He's like, well, even humans now, we preserve endangered species.
Yeah.
Some people are completely like not nonviolent, but like they don't want to have like Jainism or something, right? It's like, I don't want to interfere in anything. Like, I'm gonna step on an ant, you know? Superman could even say something like that, as simple as that is. It's like, that doesn't mean you can crush an ant. That doesn't mean you should kill all the ants, you know?
Right.
Like, that's maybe doesn't have the compassion in it either, but it's still like the opposite sentiment. It's like,
yeah, for sure.
Evolution doesn't mean we don't need bees.
Right. No, it is, and going back to the kind of the point of what we do, it's just a very, it's not only a very Western, classical, Western civilization, Western European sort of idea, but it's also kind of an older one, right? Of like 100 years ago, when there were still like literal, when the British Empire still literally existed, right? You know what I mean? Like, it's a ideology from a different time that we continue to regurgitate because we maybe haven't really taken awareness to ask questions about it. And I think, you know, you make that's a really good point about like, he could have just voiced a different opinion. And that takes it back to that thing that you were talking about before, which is the hero needs to win the moral argument as well as you have to win the moral battle as well as the physical battle.
Right.
And I think, you know, you talked about it in regards to Zod in this movie. I think when we were talking about it last week, we were talking about Thanos, but like Thanos as a character has like all of these really great scenes where he's giving these speeches about how his ideology is so meaningful and perfect and it's the only way, and the heroes are just like, you're bad and we have to stop you. And you know, Superman needed to win the moral argument. He needed to have the moral argument, and that would have involved putting lines in that character's mouth that had a perspective.
Yeah. And even asking questions like, why this planet? Just because I'm here?
Yeah.
We could go.
Yeah.
We could find another planet, though. It don't have to be here. And also, I'm the Codex. Like, I'm good. So we could search. We don't have to. It doesn't even have to happen right now. We got time. Yeah. Big Zod? Big Daddy Zod? Yeah. We got time. My homie, my G. Like, where we go?
What do you need? Like,
take a left at Mars.
You need a couple, a couple IVs of blood or something? I'm happy to give.
You let me know when you find a like planet with that doesn't have people, like a new planet. Yeah. I'll meet y'all there. I'm going to be here, but I'll meet y'all there. Zod did make a good point. He was like,
leave one of the ships behind.
Yeah, just leave a ship behind. Zod made a good point. He was like, I'm a general. I'm about to kick your butt. But then he does.
I love that. Yeah.
But I was like, yeah, Superman didn't even know he wanted to be doing this stuff. He should be getting waxed fighting a general. Not like Zod wasn't like, I was a scientist that escaped.
Yeah.
He was the man. Come on.
I think
that's why I think Superman should have had to win with his brain. He wanted to fight too bad.
Yeah.
And he didn't know how to fight. So they should have come up with a way for him to win, which they do in other Superman properties. I think even the movies, like the Phantom Zone is the way to win, but you have to like trick him into it. You can't just beat him with brawn, but he pretty much just beats him with brawn and kills him with like
Zod gets
Steven
tricked Seagal back.
Next snap.
Zod gets tricked back into the Phantom Zone every time that character shows up.
That's the trope. I don't know why he's like beating up Zod. He's supposed to be like, look down.
That's hilarious. Zod really does get kicked back into the Phantom Zone every single time that character shows up.
That's his whole thing, man. Oh man, the depriving us of like the trope.
Of the classic trope, man. Yeah. I think there's some things that I really do enjoy kind of about this take on Superman. I do think it misses some of the things that make Superman most important, but it gets like three little small things about his character. Right. First and foremost, he is an alien and it embodies that perspective, or at least speaks to it. And I've always agreed that there is power in viewing Superman as a god, like as a metaphor for God, right? There is power in that. And this movie does it. I think it does it a little too ham-fistedly. But I always thought that the power of Superman is that you don't have to have faith for Superman to exist. A being with godlike ability can literally look you eye to eye. You know what I mean? And there's a power in that. I wish they would have shown a little bit more of that. But one thing that I really love that they touch on is that, like, yeah, Superman's nobility. Like, he comes from the House of El. You know what I mean? Like, and I like the idea that they did kind of show that there's something a little older and more decadent, and that he does represent that, you know. It's something that doesn't get a lot of play in Superman mythos because it's not super important, but I did kind of like the idea that they touched on, the idea that he is some sort of Kryptonian nobility, if not royalty, you know what I mean?
It's funny because this movie, I think, is a movie that it's actually pretty watchable.
Yes, I would agree.
But that doesn't mean, so it's not like, it's not bad in the sense of I had to turn it off, or I couldn't get through it, or I just barely, you know, I just begrudgingly went through it.
Right.
It's just like missing some connective parts and some maybe consistency, right?
Yeah. I remember the other thing I was going to say. You were talking about, you know, often Black writers and creatives don't get that same opportunity. There is something about this movie that feels indulgent. The fact that it's 2.5 hours as a superhero movie, is that it, that's indulgent. It shouldn't exist. Well, even there's some great ones. I love the Batman.
No. That's not even what I was going to say. That's not what I was going to say.
Okay. I just want to finish
for a first movie.
Okay, for a first movie. Okay. No. That's fair. For a first movie. I would agree with that. But it does feel very indulgent in many ways. And I am convinced, like you were saying, this movie is still watchable. I'm convinced there's a much better movie that already exists within this movie. I think it needs 35 minutes out. There's a clear 35 minutes here. Every scene goes on about 20 seconds too long. Like there's 35 minutes
there.
I can find in that movie and get it out and make this a really good movie. And I've never edited a thing other than small videos.
Yeah, that's interesting. But I was just saying, like, yeah, it's too long for the first movie.
Yeah, absolutely.
And a franchise starter, like the first one's got to kind of like get us in and zip it and like hook us. Then with the second one, it's like you really shouldn't do that much world building in the first movie.
Yeah.
We're talking building franchises. First movie is about characterization and establishing like the action. If it's an action movie, like you look at the first John Wick, is not that long, but then the fourth one is like 3 hours, you know, you build. They started this one at 10. They didn't really have anywhere to go. So they had a, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And when you look at Snyder in DC, he did this movie, Batman and Superman and Justice League, right?
Yeah.
And then like Wonder Woman is kind of
spinoff
in the world that Snyder built. It's like in the same world.
Right.
And Aquaman is in the same world, but they weren't his movies. And it's like, and he was supposed to have more movies, and it's like, why did it get cut short? And you can say it's like, oh, the fan reaction and this. But one of the reasons they got cut short is because they didn't have anywhere else to go. He started at 10. He made it. This is a magnum opus of Superman. Yeah. I don't know what
it has. What's the every next movie? Superman moment from the mythos.
It has everything. And then it ties it at the end with like, oh, now he's at the Daily Planet. It's like, so now the next movie is he works at the Daily. It's too big.
Yeah.
And so that's why the next movie had to be Batman and Superman.
Yeah.
It couldn't be that's Superman fair. 2 because one, the title of this one is Man of Steel. So he would have had to have been fighting on an intergalactic level in the next movie.
Yeah.
So they had to make his second movie Batman's first movie. And then the third one, he had to be dead to come back and save. Like, if you look at them, if that's a Superman trilogy, basically it is, right?
Yeah.
Because they didn't have anywhere to go with solo Superman movies. So it's a solo Superman movie. Then he's with Batman. The only way to raise it is to add another iconic hero. Then he's with the entire Justice League. And he fights, what's his face? Steppenwolf.
Yeah.
But he's not in half the movie because there was nothing else to do with his character for that to that first hour or 2 hours if you watch the big one. He could only exist just to fight the bad guy.
Yeah, it's a great example. Again, not to criticize Snyder specifically, but it's a great example. I just don't think that he really understood what to do with that character. I feel like he's somebody who is was attracted to the spectacle and the power. You know, Snyder
and interrogating.
Yeah, interrogating it. He is very much interested in interrogating storylines and kind of flipping them on their heads. And I want to, you're right, that we should give him that credit. That's part of his artistic work in general. But he's also like very, you mentioned Watchmen, right? And I think Watchmen works pretty well as a movie because it sticks pretty close to the Watchmen book, right? Like it's there, right? It has a story already. And then I think about this movie and some of the other Superman movies in the Superman trilogy of Snyder's. And there's just so many like elements that are like just taken straight from the book. We already mentioned the church scene. It's taken straight from a comic book. The speech that Jor-El gives Superman on the first flight, you know, in time they will join you in the sun, Cal. That speech is from All-Star Superman. Like I said, so much of this plot is, and some of the scenes are directly from Superman Birthright. So I also feel like there's some of that. Like, I feel like Snyder, he's so good at the technical piece and creating these images, and the emotional kind of like visceral, immediate emotional impact of scenes. But the more that he has to kind of doesn't have that template, in some ways, it's just a hodgepodge of other people's Superman scenes. It's a pastiche in some ways. And I do think that, you know, just having thought about it as we've been talking, I do think that highlights on some of the inconsistency that we've both been talking about. Because it kind of jumps around.
That being said, I am looking forward to the James Gunn Superman that's coming.
Yeah.
We might have to watch and do a pod right after that, just like we did for Gladiator. Mm-hmm. That's not until May, maybe. I actually don't know when that's coming out. That's coming out,
I think, June.
May, June, this summer.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't want to get into like the trailer and everything, but just based on James Gunn's previous work, I feel like it's going to be more superhero-y.
Yeah.
If you think about like Guardians of the Galaxy, like it's over the top. It'll be more fun. Zack Snyder is like notorious for not his movies not being fun in a sense. Like,
yeah,
he wants them to be dark and hard and brooding, you know. And James Gunn is more like flippant and nice, and you know, you laugh. And not that he won't kill a character if he needs to,
sure,
but it'll be like a brighter, lighter movie. So, I think Superman is a tough nut to crack.
Oh, yeah,
definitely. I think that's been proven, and I think maybe the character is a bit easier to do on TV.
I absolutely agree. I think there's been some great TV work consistently. Yeah.
And they've been popular, like even going back to Lois and Clark.
Yeah, very popular absolutely.
Show in the early 90s. Smallville
really
set a standard for Superman. And this Lois,
Superman and Lois. Solid.
People really liked it. I saw like two seasons of it, and I thought it was really good. So
yeah, it's solid stuff. I think you're right. You know, Superman's a really hard character to crack. I think for all the flaws of Man of Steel, I do think it's still, you know, in and of itself, without trying to like get into Batman versus Superman and all the other ones, I think by itself it is a really interesting take on the subject matter. I don't know that the execution, I know the execution is not 100% there. But yeah, like you said, it's a very watchable film. There's a lot of great moments. I don't know that they add out to something bigger, but there are a lot of great moments. And again, like just as a general take, like this kind of modern day sci-fi take in the real world of Superman, I think it's interesting. So absolutely, I'm very intrigued though to see what James Gunn's film will be like. You know, trailer looks good and interesting. I work in downtown Cleveland, so I got to walk past set a couple of times where they were filming and stuff. So, you know, they're like building a different world that has like a more of a 70s, 80s sort of look to it. And I'm going to be really interested
Like
in
this
that.
retro feel. Yeah.
This retro feel, which I think Superman movies live best in.
And Clark, the actor, I don't know his name, and I'll figure it out later when
Yeah, I
the
can't
movie comes
remember.
out. But he gets to be Clark.
Yes.
Henry Cavill never really got to be Clark in the
Ooh.
city, who's hiding that he's Superman. He never got to be the bumbling Clark, like, no, I couldn't possibly be a superhero.
That's, and you know what? That actually brings up something that I wanted to say when I was watching, but forgot to take notes on. You know, there's a couple of scenes with his mom, or at the very end when he shows up as Clark, there's a couple scenes where like he smiles, and it's like, you know, Henry Cavill smiling, that guy is Superman, right? And to your point, with the James Gunn movie, I think it's a real shame that we didn't get to see Henry Cavill smile more in this movie, be more joyous, get a little bumbly Clark in the city sort of thing. And I really am intrigued to see the kind of more joyous, purposeful warrior sort of trope that I believe James Gunn will likely bring. Superman's supposed to be a powerful character, but also supposed to be one of joy.
We'll leave it at that. We'll leave it at that. I didn't
Yeah,
really
lots to
have,
talk
but yeah,
about.
there is. We really just scratched the surface on like the lowest of it.
Yeah.
The movie itself barely scratched the surface of that.
Yeah,
Which also kind
absolutely.
of goes to what we've been talking about with some of these movies where like, and this has long been talked about even in a different way of like female characters just servicing the male characters.
Yeah.
And these male directors, like they gave Lois a life and a career and some characterization, but she still wasn't really served in the movie. And I really like that actress.
Yeah.
And she was in Arrival. She did a great job. And, I thought she could have made it even more dynamic, Lois,
I think it's
if
even.
that had been a focus.
Sorry. Yeah, I think you're absolutely correct. And I feel like, again, not to talk about another movie, but I think in Batman versus Superman, it's even a little bit more egregious because she has more screen time and somehow less story. But like, yeah, I really feel like Amy Adams brought a really interesting take on that character from the scenes we get of her, and it would have been great to see more of her Lois.
I think she's just a good actress.
Yeah, just solid for sure.
And it's funny because I don't think about her a lot, but if I see a movie and she's in it, I'm like, I just believe it.
Yeah, she's a solid
I'm just
actress.
along for the ride. So that's Man of Steel.
That's Man of Steel.
Fun times. Yeah, who knows what we'll do next?
Yeah.
Back to the drawing board.
Peace.